Let's start with Katan Yudzayin in Erech HaShulchan, where now he's going to talk about, yeah, I guess these two go together, this issue. Now, we read the Mishnah Berurah, and I argue based upon the Mishnah Berurah that if you have like a small amount of food at a Kiddush, just to be familiar, so that even the Magen Aron would not say that you have to wash. I looked at the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, I think it's even clearer there, that in order to have to wash, it has to be that you're koveya on the bread. Your koveya on the bread, and then you eat other stuff with it. And it might be you're eating more of the other stuff than bread, but you have to be koveya on the bread. When someone goes to a kiddush and they have a couple of crackers or cookies, so they can say that it was kiddush malkum suda, which you could also, by the way, just drink a release of the wine according to the gaonim, and that's the shulchan aruch paskins. So that's not being koveya on the bread. I think it's very clear that a regular kiddush, even according to Magen Aron, again depending on how you eat, but if you just have a couple of cookies, so you can say, I had, mizonos, so now it's b'malchum suda. You don't wash for that. That's not the case. Yeah.
But to redeem, if you made kiddush on for yourself, did that redeem count, or you made a separate redeem?
It can be the wine you made the kiddush on. It's just that it doesn't help most people, because usually, like at a kiddush in shul, only the person making the kiddush drinks. They don't even technically have to drink Revius. They only need to drink a Malalugma. That's all that needs to be drunk from the kosher bracha. But if they pour off, let's say like as would be on a Friday night, so then nobody's having a Revius personally, and therefore there's no... it's not the Malkum Suda on the basis of the wine. But theoretically, if everybody had a glass of wine in front of them and drank a Revius of that, drank 3 ounces, then that could constitute Via Suda. So if you, let's say, the better example would be grape juice, because I don't know how you would do this with wine, but you're very thirsty, and you're a little tired, and so make Kiddush on grape juice and just drink grape juice, and that's called Kiddush Malkum Suda. The question comes up, people want to eat. We have the Shaila coming up for us on at our son Shabbat Chatan a week from Shabbos. Friday is Shabbat Tevis, and the problem is the hotel is not planning on having they're not opening the dining hall till like 6 o'clock or something like that. So, which is a little absurd, because presumably our party is not the only people with from people in it who are fasting on Friday. So my wife asked me, what can we do? And I said, if we have grape juice and you have some crackers or something like that, so if people even need to drink a release of the grape juice, or they need to have some crackers, so that they're allowed, in order that they'd be allowed to eat and drink. So if you drink water, you can't drink. Once the chiyuv of kiddush is chal, at night or during the day, you're not allowed to drink even water until you make kiddush. Right? During the morning, when you wake up on Shabbos, before you make kiddush, before you daven, you can drink water. That's not a problem. But once you daven Shabbos, when now the kiddush is chal, and you can make kiddush, you're not allowed to drink until you make kiddush. So, for example, you have a bar mitzvah boy who wants to be able to drink during the leaning. So, what I do is to bring a little bottle of grape juice and pour it into, have a kiddush cup right after Shacharis, or during Chazar Shachats, or Tzasei V'Torah, let him go make kiddush for the first time, maybe, for himself, as a gadol, on the grape juice, and either have a couple of Oreos to eat, or just drink the full release of the grape juice. And now he's had kiddush Malkum Suda. Now that he's had his kiddush, he can drink his water bottle during, between Aliyos. But otherwise, people do it, but it seems to me not proper, in particular because he's being mechunach into mitzvahs. So to have him, be drinking during Kriyas HaTorah when he hasn't made kiddush yet, what kind of chinuch is that? Well, we have this issue, by the way, during Shacharis also, my wife, what the problem is that we have people coming from Chutz Laretz, so they're going to be jet lagged. We're God only going to be there for Monday, so we won't be jet lagged. So but the breakfast, which you shouldn't miss at a good Israeli hotel, the breakfast, they're going to close at a certain point, and they're serving them just lunch after that. I think they're not even serving super delicious. So, they're so much on the path, then this is disappointing to me, because I've always, ever since a child, I understood you don't eat before, you don't eat, unless you're not feeling well, you don't eat before davening. On any day of the week, the Shabbos being no different. Drink water is one thing. And Mishnah Berurah says if you drink coffee without the milk, maybe you could put the milk in like if you can't drink otherwise. But sit and eat. What kind of business is that? Right? We just learned it in the kids, right? That's not just the Gemara Shabbos eating before Mincha Marav, within a certain time before when the Chiyuv has come. That's lo sofel adam. Lo sofel kodem shikas halatim chemim. While it's not a real drasha, it's not smachta. The fact that it's not smachta for it tells you that that's much more serious. Right? I think that there are lots of firm people who will eat before mincha, you know, even though non mincha has come, like we did today, because we have minyan kavua. People will be, and it's a question of whether it's mincha gold mincha tan anyway, but people will be so much upon that, but nobody eats before Shabbos. I don't want to say nobody. I know there are lots of otherwise, you know, Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Kashrut Jews who eat before davening, especially on Shabbos. I don't know them what they're. So the eight to here, which I don't love, but it's to me it's an acceptable eight given the difficult circumstances, is we're going to daven Shabbos first, and before we do Kriyas HaTorah, we will take a break so people can eat. They do this often in camps. They do that. So you daven Shabbos. So ideally you have Kriyas HaTorah as well, but nonetheless, that's not, you know, that's a halachic tzara. So anyway. So coming back to how we, our issue with the Kiddush, so in order to be Kiddush Bapam Suda, you can either have some Mizonos or you can drink a Revius of wine. And the Shita Sagaonim is that the Revius of Italian constitutes Kriyas Suda. Enough of this. Okay. Go ahead. Okay, so this is the Magen Avraham is quoting. That was the second bit of the Magen Avraham, which is a little hard to understand. When you have lechem, that's all you have, your saveya. Others would not be saveya from this, but they would use this amount of bread plus other stuff. The Magen Avraham thought the same thing. The yesh.
The
gam acherim. So this is when he quotes the Shulchan Aruch Harav. Which are those who say that it doesn't matter, even if you have a shear that people would normally saveh with, you have to have at least dollar dates. So now he says, well, when we talk about the shear of Shtei Sudas required for Eirav Tchulin, where we're very late, over a mayor of Yehuda Silver and Cain.
Silver and Cain, the Mishnah, the Eirvin, Dimisharim, the Pas Muat.
Now they say you mishayer with a small amount of bread, as long as it would be a meal, eating it with liftan. Then close that up. Yeah. Okay, so we pasta like Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Shimon, who say that you measure just by bread, a meal full of bread. Okay, so there when we're enormously make, but we still say you need a larger shear of bread. So here. There are many people who eat a ton of food and they only have a small amount of bread because they can afford to have all this other stuff. What?
Like us nowadays.
Yes. Yeah, what shaykhus to that? The
E.
Right, so now this is really an attack on this side. The fact that you're sated because you had some bread at the Kiddush and then you ate all this other stuff, he says, so what? If you all you had was the other stuff, if all you had was peiros, you wouldn't bench on it. So, lachem nira. Okay, so he thinks that we only look at bread. So if you, in order to wash a bench on Passover the Kista, then you have to eat a sheer feast from the bread alone, aside from anything else you eat. So that's what he thinks. So again, as I said yesterday, and I said to you earlier, I think that it's clear from the Shulchan Aruch Harav, who's the author of this formulation of Mishnah Brura, following Magen Avraham, is pas koldehu is not sufficient. You have to be koveya on pas. You may not have to have such a huge share of pas, but it has to be the kriyas of the suda. So just eating a couple of cookies because you want hamazonos, so you could say it's welcome suda, it doesn't qualify. And I think according to nobody, would you make wash or make cookies on that. Now, he talks about a different case, which is really interesting. interesting, in particular, the model that he adopts for Pasa Bava Kistin in his Limud Tzchus in brackets. Go ahead.
Okay,
I'm making it wrong. No, we can skip, go to Yuches. What does that mean?
I'm not sure what a kruch is.
I know what a kruch is. What? I know it's a rooster. So, I mean, it's some bird or something like that. It's an idiom. It's like they scream bloody murder, we would say. Alma. Here's an important line comes in. So Oakland. Good enough for me. Bow meal. Okay, so I suspect that I don't know what bow meal is, but I suspect that's what the word is. Because if you see, you know how the name blau is spelled in many contexts? Baislav Amandur. It's probably a dialectical issue. You know. So I suspect that this is, we would say this is bow meal. But either way, so he says they eat a lot of the bread. They eat a lot of pasta with kissing. The aim. Right, if they don't eat so much bread, then I think at this point you still have to eat some bread. You have to eat a meaningful amount of bread to qualify. He says, even if they're careful not to eat so much bread, harvey, but they eat, you know, there are, even though he doesn't agree, there are four of them who say, even in the Magen Avraham, you have to wash a bench there. Okay. Oh, my second. And they certainly eat the five, four kibbutzim, right? That's not the guy who has three crackers. Okay, so. Right, they really don't eat a lot of bread. Okay. Yes, Jay.
What is the difference between this, in the case of this and the case of the previous one?
So I think the case of the previous one is when you have a fairly small amount of bread, where it itself couldn't be enough bread that somebody would use in a typical suda. Whereas here, he says, they open hardly, they eat a lot of the bread, which means that could be in itself previous. And if you ate that amount of bread, even without the other, you know, you would be somewhat saved. Obviously, you can't be totally saved, otherwise you wouldn't have room for anything else.
But he said, like, and they're careful not to eat too much. Right? Isn't that, like, just, like, a small amount?
So, I think he would say, once you hit four bitzim, for sure that's not a small amount anymore. Right? According to that opinion. He would say four bitzim is not enough. He's describing as a scenario where you're eating a fairly substantial amount of bread. And you're eating all this other stuff. Bread, but bread's possible to kiss it. Now, if some people say they won't eat so much. Yes, but according to many authorities, even though he doesn't hold that way, if you eat four kibbutzim, for sure, you know, it's going to be some, or, you know, he says they're eating more than four kibbutzim, and it's a shear that others would be koveya suda on that amount of bread with the other stuff.
So even in the careful situation, it's more than four kibbutzim?
Correct, right. It would be a problem according to many. And only if you're really careful not to eat very much. Eat a couple of kizasim, and then, so that's a case where it would be okay, but most people don't seem to do that. So, really, this is terrible, except for what are you going to do? Because nobody listens to us. Okay.
Hey, God, the Akhala, the Taras, the Sun, and the Varak, bringing him up. The Hood. Hey, God, the Akhala, the Taras, the Uta, and the Varak, the Shana. The Marsh, the Shana, the Inatala, the Shia, the Kiyasuda,
Okay. So he says that it doesn't matter how much you eat, it matters the manner in which you eat it. Now, if that were true, probably, so your Oreos, Jake, it would never say you eat it the correct kevach manner. You sit down to your Oreos because you're hungry, and then you just eat more, and you eat more, and you eat more. At some point, you're going to regret it because now you have no room for dinner, or the healthy food, maybe. But the bottom line is that's not called Erev Keva. So he says, he's going to go on to Mashmah Lashona, and V'zeyadua. Okay, so this is what happens. I'm not going to take my jacket. Take my jacket off. Right, imagine when we had lunch. We had lunch. We didn't all like stand around. We all sat down to eat together. If you were at the Washington Rally, what did people do to eat dinner? They all stood around, right? They just milled around eating the sandwiches, which is why we didn't make a mezuma. This is no kriyas. What?
It was bread mamash, so.
Correct. I don't know, understood. I'm talking, but it wasn't what we call their fias. That's the reason why people washed the bench. It's because it was bread mamish. But according to the shita, let's say it were pasav abekistin. Let's say it were mezonos bread, if there is such a thing. Then that's not, according, again, we normally assume it would depend how much you ate. And people ate enough to be dinner. But the way he's presenting it here, that would be considered achilas harai. It's derech harai. I don't call achilas harai, derech harai. Okay, people sitting down to eat, you take off your jacket. You want to sit down to eat, like a bench. If you keep your jacket on, it means you're just like kind of standing around and eating. And that is not, that's called derech harai. Go ahead. I love that. Chotvim v'ochlem k'mashahem. Ali hachana. What is that? What does chotvim mean?
Okay.
Ani.
What?
Oh no. What?
What?
No. What does chotvim mean?
Snacking.
What?
Snacking.
That's what chotvim means. It's a big problem, actually. It's disgusting what goes on in some places. They are not refined French people. Daintily walk over it. Take a little piece. It's like sometimes they have to keep the kids. The kids act like pigs. They go, apparently, again, I don't, I'm never there. They could go steal all the little hot dogs first before any adults even get there.
I was in Israel once, there was a bar filling candy bags. One man at my feet, a kid slid from like 5 feet away on his stomach and like grabbed it.
But that's different, because that's part of the game.
That's part of the game.
Yes. Yes.
Because that was a surreal experience.
Why were you so slow?
I was expecting the kid to come out of the front.
They say,
I know, like, oh.
You snooze, you lose. So especially
you
know,
the ideas of
don't try to like throw rice at weddings or something like that. Oh, I see. Mr. Meiri, what do you have to say about that?
I'm gonna keep myself safe.
Okay, fine. Anyway, you're supposed to use the sun kissed or the star kissed, but it's double. My children, we did not throw candy. I think it's a bizarre personally, but like it's limited to what you can fight, so we did not have candy of our mitzvahs. But anyway. Well, I knew when I had bar mitzvah boys, the drill was when he was getting to the end of Berachas Haftorah, you descended from the bima, or you pulled your talus over your head, so it's a shield.
One of the Chabad leaders, while halfway in middle school, so he rang a fax, he brought his helmet with him.
That's funny. Someone once, I don't know what they threw, someone once at our shul almost got a concussion. Not the bar mitzvah boy. Someone like. I don't think it was a soft candy.
Yeah, they outlawed the joke.
What? Yeah. No, it was someone who threw, but it didn't make it over the mechita. It hit a woman in the side of the head. So, anyway. What? Yeah, Dafyomi people might be having fun with this. You know, it's like, what if it's a mitzvah? Is there a shishtak? If you're near Chanukah, for Yehuda, outside the chanos, and the gomel walks by with the pishta and it catches fire. Are you liable or not? Because it was mitzvah father. All right. Anyway, so the Aruch HaShulchan says this chotfin. Chotfin is not a compliment. That sounds like a kiddush.
Yeah. I mean, it also sounds like a shmor. Which is
a correct shmor would be the same thing. A sovereign.
The sovereign, the zelo mikre kibiyatsuda. The zeshomer wagmar, hoshacham kohen,
yeah, you're going to have to be dochek. Hoshachem kovin alam means the way in which people are koveya, not the amount called that which on which they're koveya. It's all difficult. The chol. That's quite a little bit. Okay, so what he is talking about is a situation that where people are eating meaningful amounts of the pasta of the kista. Right, so if there's a bread that people like to eat, but they made it in a way that it qualifies as pasta b'kistin, and you're eating that as a substantial part of the meal, so the Aruch HaShulchan assumes that there's no question, nobody disagrees, you have to wash and bench. But as I said, on the opposite end of the spectrum, I believe also nobody disagrees that if you just have a kizayis of, you know, crackers, a kizayis food crackers, so you can say it's kiddush b'makom suda, you do not wash and bench. There's no need to wash and bench whatsoever. You can stuff yourself to the gills, whatever that means, for the person, with the cholin and potato kugel and lakshad kugel, because that's not pas. You can stuff yourself with all the other stuff, with the sushi if you like, and there would be no chametz in your chasamas. Okay, so now I think you know what to do. Do it, or don't do it. Right, any questions that you want to ask on pas about the kista before we go on? Alright.
The
Aruch HaShulchan knows that. He says it almost as much, not quite explicitly as you're saying. The Frying points out well that the story that opens Pasa Baba Kistam, whatever it's been based on at Aleph, is that Rav Huna ate 13 breads. And the response to that is, you know, Adi Kafna, Ela Kosha Chirim Kovin Alav. So that really sounds like he was talking about the amount, not the manner in which she ate them. Okay. Fine. Shasisa. Thank you, Lesha. Shasisa. Who would like to read Shasisa for me? How about? That's okay. You volunteer. I'm in a charitable mood. I don't want to pick on anybody. Go ahead.
Shasisa. Which?
Yeah, it's Rashi says you take kernels that were roasted in the oven, and then you grind them up, and then you mix in water.
Yeah.
Okay. How is this different? Just the way Rashi describes, how is it different, probably, than your typical porridge?
Seems like the grain is unripe.
Is that you roast it first? In other words, the roasting, you've already roasted the kernels. Now you make it. Now you grind up the roasted kernels, make into a flour. It's not regular flour. A regular flour is from wheat kernels that are raw, that are untreated. Right? I mean, you process the wheat to get the kernels out, to get the seeds out, but then you grind them up right there. This is kemach tloyos. You roasted the kernels of grain, and now you grind it up.
Well, I think there's something about how it's unripe kernels, which is why you have to roast them.
Okay, because they're drying, out in the process too. Okay. So.
Rav Amar.
No, he doesn't say, Rashi doesn't say, by the way, that they're not ripe. He says when there's still moisture. When there is grain in the field, I know this is true with corn, and I assume it's true with other things as well, the farmers wait to harvest the corn until it dries a certain amount. Because in order to store it, if you have too much moisture, it's going to spoil. So when they grow corn in this country, once it's reached full growth and it comes sometime in the fall, they need a stretch of time where it doesn't rain, out in the Midwest, so that the corn can dry out. Actually, a farmer showed me this once when he went over, showed me a thing of corn, and he broke it open. But look and see, you could tell how much moisture was in it. And he said that when, this was not during the fall season, this was during the summer, but he said to me that they wait till a certain amount. It's really cool to watch. These guys actually really, they were so removed from that world. But like these people, I mean, they use very advanced technology today, by the way. You know, for those of you who learn Hilchos Shabbos and think you understand something about how grain is processed, you have no clue how it's processed today. You learn Hilchos Shabbos, you know it's processed? Well, first you cut it from the ground, then you gather it in, then you thresh it to separate the kernels from the stalks, and then you winnow it, blow the stalks away, and then you have your kernels, right? That's very nice. Today, all those malachas are done in one fell swoop by something called a combine. You can watch pictures of a combine going through the field, chewing up, harvesting the stuff, grinding it, processing it, and it has a chute that shoots off into another vehicle alongside it, which is just catching all the kernels. That's all that's left. And it takes the rest of the stuff, and it's ground up, and it's deposited on the field to serve as, compost for the next season. It's pretty cool. It's very, very cool. So, sorry, but it ruins all the malachas. Basically, you've gone from Tira to Tchina, not including one fell swoop. That those machines on Machal Shabbos, when they use on Shabbos, they do beit for Shabbos, those machines. So he says, you're correct. If you harvest it when they're wet, it's not unripe, but there's still moisture, it hasn't dried. So you have to roast it in order to be able to deal. You know, I gather you don't want to store it with its kernels because it's going to rot. Okay. I think you can't leave it standing. If you leave it too long, then everything falls over. So it has to have enough moisture to stand up, but not too much moisture to be rotting and to be unstorable. In fact, the way they do it is, if I'm not mistaken, is that there are granaries, there are grain terminals that take the grain, that store it. The farmers bring it there and they sell it to the grain terminals, and the grain terminals then resell it. And there they will charge fees for drying. There's no tested product being delivered. And if it's too moist, then they have systems that can dry it, but then you get charged to the farmer for delivering, for delivering grain that's not fully, or you don't get your full price because you're delivering grain that's not fully finished and ready for storage and shipping. All right, the life of not being a farmer. Anything you don't have to know, you just go into the supermarket and you buy your finished food. Okay. Anyway. Well, all right, Shimon.
When I was telling my kids about the famine, they were like, but wait a minute, couldn't they just go into the supermarket? And I'm like, yeah, but where does the supermarket get from? And you're like, well, what about chickens? They eat grass. And I'm like, yeah, but then that wouldn't grow either. And they're like, then he started saying things completely off topic and I had to...
That captures it beautifully, actually, right? How we are totally divorced from, our food production. I will tell you, Rabbi Lewis might support. I know we'll support this. If you actually were to witness firsthand how most of your meat is raised, you would never eat meat. What?
Oh, for junk food?
Right.
No.
So we are very much detached from it, and that's unfortunate. I think you probably wouldn't eat eggs either. There are chickens. It's not so hard to find chickens, at least, that are cage free and things like that. Still, maybe a little factor that it's a whole lot better than what happens with most of our chickens. So it is not. If you've seen this stuff, which I have not seen firsthand, because if I had, I probably also would be considering at least something meat. Chicken's not much better than meat. Meat might be the worst environmentally, but anyway. Okay. Yeah.
Even kosher meat?
What?
Even kosher meat?
Not even. Doesn't matter. If you want humane beef, you have to get grass fed. But that's very expensive, right? They're probably to chop for ground beef. For regular ground kosher beef, which is much more expensive than non-kosher meat, it's probably $8-$9 a pound now, maybe $5-$7. Whereas the grass-fed stuff, which means it's free-range, is like $20 a pound.
Oh.
Yeah. So the answer is you would just eat a lot less meat. Meat would be a Shabbos delicacy, and that would be it. Look, part of the problem also, Rabbi Sam, this is true halacha hasn't always grappled with this because things have not been done on a certain scale, but it sort of incidentally grapples with it. The problem with meat is that there is cost offloading. The environmental damage is done, but you don't pay for it. Because you don't pay for it in the price of meat. So it's like, what's that?
Externality.
Like, externality. Like that's the problem. You're not paying for the full course that the product is produced. If you were, it would be a lot more expensive. That's the challenge. Okay. Anyway, so shasisa, it's a good vegan meal. And you take the ground up flour and of the roasted kernels, you put it with water. So, there's a machlokas rav in Shmuel. Shmuel, Rav says, okay. Rav and Shmuel ever argue? Never. Okay. But, comes along Rav Chista, Oste Shalom Bim Ramav. And now either he or the Gemara explains. Okay, so Ava is now did Rav Chista say this? He said Ava Ava Habaraka. Did he say Ava? Did he give that explanation?
You can't tell.
Now, one of the things, if you look at Rav, so he distinguished between Av and Nacha. Now, the way the Gemara presents it, and this is or isn't Rav Chista talking, we don't know, is one of them is Lachila, one of them is the Refuah. Let's say the Gemara didn't say that. Is there an alternate possibility you could propose? Let them think for a second. Assuming Rav Chista didn't say, Ova lachina abdele raka the refuah kafile. If Rav Chista just said, Vokhevi kanva ova kanva raka, is there a different way to explain the distinction between those two? Fine, you should be happy. Shimmy, explain to them why you should be happy.
One has clarity eater, one has a water eater. That's not what you wanted.
I wasn't what I wanted, but that is not unreasonable. The only problem with that is what? Rabu Shmuel da Amrei de Tarbaya, Koshi Yeshko Mechamesha Semin, and Rav Mevizomas. That's the problem with that solution. It's a reasonable difference of Abanacha, but not for Rabu Shmuel. Remember you had, that was the opening of the Sugya, where the Gemara said, Dubsha Ikar versus Kincha Ikar, and then it says, no. It's Mistaba like Rav Tana, because Rabu Shmuel da Amrei Tarbaya. So it seems unlikely that's the distinction. What other distinction might there be? Jake? What's the difference? A little water, a lot of water?
What does it mean to be first the opposite rocket?
One is denser and one is looser, is the best way I would translate those. So Shimmy's undoubtedly correct. The raka has more water. Both of them have water mixed in. The question is, what's the proportion? Lewis? Oh, I know why my Erie wasn't checking up and down about this. Tosos.
That's even though they do say Refuah
and Achila. But that's going to undermine your case. The only reason why it's a hakol is because it's Refuah.
Right.
I know. We have to. I ask you this question because it's not a dead issue yet. Right? Ultimately, there is a problem with saying it's straight off the Refuah, and it's going to require modification. It's going to require modification. It's a problem that all the Rishonim are going to confront, but we'll explain this in a moment. And not so much in Hilchos Brachos, but in Hilchos Shabbos. Okay, but somehow, if Rav Chista didn't say it, why did the Gemara assume that it has to do with Achila versus Refuah? Or how did the stomach of the Gemara know? Yes.
Because then it starts asking questions about Refuah and Shabbos.
In other words, you could say that this line in the Gemara is part of the Shakta Tire of the Gemara, not Rav Chista. Where did the Gemara get it from? The answer is got it from the continuation. Rav Yosef's question against Rav Chista tells you at least how Rav Yosef understood Rav Chista. And by the way, I'm not arguing, in this case, I'm not arguing that there's a different interpretation of what Rav Chista meant. Rav Yosef certainly understood Rav Chisda the way it's written in the Gemara, Achila versus Rafur. And that's what the companion of Shach, the Taya, all assume. That if Rav Chisda didn't say it, does that prove that's what Rav Chisda meant? No. Is it possible that Rav Yosef misunderstood? Oh, anything is possible. I don't assume that. It's just, all I'm pointing out is that that type of a line doesn't have to come from Rav Chisda. It can come, it can be extracted by the Gemara from the following, the Shach, the Taya that follows. Even if Rav Chisda didn't say it, it is clear that's how Rav Yosef and Abaye understood what Rav Chisda meant. Did Rav Chisda really mean that? Okay, so we can't say for sure. But the Gemara would have gotten it to fill it in. If it's not Rav Chisda, a direct quotation, it would have gotten it from the continuing Shach of Atari. In this case, it's a purely academic exercise. The reason why it could be a big issue in scholarship is there's an old question, which I think is on some level, well, I think it's a silly question. I think the question is clear to me that that one theory that the Academy is wrong. Is any of the sum of the Gemara early? So this question, right, this one actually, in other words, so the question is there Rabbi Yosef not? Well, firstly, it could be Rabbi Chisda talking. But if you assume that they structurally, that it's not, that it's the sum of the Gemara, which is a reasonable assumption, by the way. It's not as mukhuk here, but in other words, when we have a machlokas, Rav said X and Shmuel said Y. Rav said X, da 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 da, Shmuel said Y, ya da da da. That second half is not Rav and Shmuel talking, that's the Gemara. This is not as clear, but even if you assume structurally this is clear, does that mean that this is an early sum of the Gemara? Because you see how Rav Yosef is assuming the sum of the Gemara. And the answer is not necessarily. It could be the sum of the Gemara was created out of Rav Yosef. That's the point. You don't know which came first. Okay. For our purposes, I do want to deal with the eating and drinking because the Rishonim deal with it, and it may play a role in the sugya. But for the moment, we work with the Chisda's assumption that if it's l'achila, it's a mezonos, l'refua, it's a shahakol. Why is it a shahakol if it's l'refua?
It was almost not anything at all.
Let me ask you a question. And this is a general question here. This is the question that the Rishonim will ask. What bracha do you make on a nigron? Now, if you are, it's kaveh l'refua. If you're not, it's maya d'shilke. So what? What?
So far as you're not eating the taste or ingredients, but rather for the overall benefit that it gives you, unrelated to the actual ingredients in the chocolate, because you're not actually.
Your story is correct, but how is it different than an igloo, where when you put shemen in it, let's leave aside the rashi, it's not a question of even if it's rebush shemen. It's not the different ingredients, it's why you're eating it. So when you eat an igloo normally, you make padam. When you're doing it because you're closest to grono, and the shemen is what you're really after, you make the bar grades. You're doing it for four purposes. It doesn't, instead, it becomes the ikar bracha, becomes ha'etz. Now, the reason why it becomes ha'etz is because the ikar is now the shemen. But the whole thing is being drunk for four purposes. We showed him asked this question. I don't remember if Tosis does, but Rashba certainly asked this question. And it requires defining different kind of situations. The other question here is, even if you don't want to make mezonos, why don't you make haladama? What bracha do you make on kemach tlayos?
Is it like
kimol? Well, Tosha says it is kimol b'chitei. Remember how the Rif had this funny situation where the maskana seems to be, I don't know if the Shulchan Aruch passed it this way, but many of you shall assume the Manav Shach that Kemach Tlayos is Ha'adama. Not regular Kemach, but Kemach Tlayos. And what, because remember, it's already processed. I told you probably not, you're not supposed to eat today raw flowers because of salmonella concerns. But Kemach Tlayos would be fine because they roasted the Kemach. So, the Manav Shach, some say we make a bracha, some say that the Gemara is the discussion of Kim Chadachite is Kemach Tlayos, but we pass them like Rav Yehuda. That you make Hadama. Even if you don't pass the Rav Yehuda, the Rishonim would say that the Gemara is talking about Kemach Mamash. But Kemcha the Klayos, everybody would say that you make Hadama on, because it's not, it's edible. So the Rashba says that if Bishlama, if you were to hold like Rav Nachman, by Kamash Shokhayos, assuming Shalom, even by Kamash Shokhayos, then I understand why this is a Shahakma. Right? Because the flower itself is not Limizonos, and therefore flower alone is a Shahakma. But if you say, like with Yehuda, that Kamach Kloyos, and maybe even regular Kamach, is Ha'adama, then why would this be Ha'adama? Yes. Kosher Ishbo brings you Mizonos. It's only been a Mizonos.
Then that
wouldn't
be
Adama. But it would be a Shahako?
I don't know. You should make a point first. I don't know. Hagama does not seem to have like a clear extreme rule. They mean, like, you can say, oh, Mizonos is called Yeshua and Shahako because it's sort of a rule. Right? But you can't really stay in there like Adama doesn't really seem. I don't know.
So I'm going to go back to the Enneagram case.
Yeah.
Right, you see, if Kenach is a Shahako, you don't have to ask the question. It's not a Mizonos type food, and therefore the only question is what the Gemara say, make a Shahako. That seems.
Does
anyone
have an answer for that?
Yeah. Okay. So, anyway, so that was Rav Yosei, that Rav Chisda said. So, Mosif Rav Yosei.
Mother Rav Yosei, Vishavin, Shavokshin, Eshavshatos, Vishavos.
Right now, what does the Braisa say? What does Baruch Hashem mean?
Stir.
What do you stir with? Probably not. Boom. Now, what is the Shavin Shabochen Esas Hashtos? What does the Shavin mean first?
They're equal.
What does their equal mean? It's a technical term you'll find in the Mishnayos or Brises. What does the Shavin mean, Shimi? Right? They agree. When you have a machlokas between two Tanam, they'll have a machlokas, they'll say, but Vishavin, they are in agreement that the following day. So this was an machlokas between Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, and either the Chacham or maybe Rabbi actually, about gibul, about certain circumstances when you pour water into something that doesn't really make the alisha a go, whether that might, pouring the water in itself, might be considered alisha. You don't need to do more than that. So Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda was very makel, and they had a machlokas about one particular thing. Then, the Shavin, everybody agrees, it's mota shabochan asashkos, that it's not a problem of alisha. Now, what is the nature of the shtos, the shikos, shasisa? Well, if Rashi points out the Havla, Tosa states it maybe more explicitly. What is, by Rashi, you have to know what he's driving at in Shabbos Hashem. Tosa is explicit about it. What does Bo Hashem imply about the nature of the nips? And it's very liquidy. You generally don't use a spoon to stir dough.
Use a spatula to hold it. That's more valuable.
That's not mixing it. You don't go around with a spoon when you have a dough. You do it with a batter. So this is very loose. So everybody agrees there's no, even the Chacham and Rebbe agree that there's no lisha problem here on Shabbos. Now, and Shosim Zeisom HaMitzvah. Now, there's one little problem. Refuah on Shabbos. Healing is a good thing. Shabbos is a good thing too. Ideally, both of them are done by God. However, Ein Darko Shabbat Adam Refuos, Ela Shekhet Barnagam. That's Ramban quotes. I'm Varapo Yerapa, I think. Really, we're not supposed to use doctors, but that's the minute. That's Varapo Yerapa. Yeah, I know. You're laughing at me. You know what it says by Asahanela? In the Bayamah, it says that in his holy, among the bad things he did was the Gamachoyolo Darash Hashem Kim Barofen. Which, of course, is hilarious that his name is Pasa.
What
he didn't seek the God, he sought out the doctors and the solos. Rakla is Viknaso Chala es Radlav. It's funny, but his name is Asa. You know why? Do you know what the Israeli medical journal is called?
Oh.
Asya. And do you know why it's called that? It's in Aramaic. And Asya is a doctor. You guys know the word. Machay from the Slichos. Umasei. Masei is Asya. Allah Samachyot. Allah Samachal. God smites and God heals. It's the targum of Machatsky Vani Arpa. Machena Vana Mesena. You're not alone in your ignorance. That's my job, the teacher.
Right.
I had teachers who taught me. They cured me, helped me cure me of my ignorance. Rabbi Dulitz told me many times, I never said this to you. You're ignorant. There's some people that can go over so well, but some of us, it mostly spurred us on to try to alleviate that condition. I don't think it's in, unfortunately, it's not listed in the DSM-4. If it were... whatever. Thank God. Sorry. So it hasn't. It's not in the DSM-5, unfortunately. Ignorance is a condition, a mental health condition. What? For those who win the Darwin Awards, yes. Okay. So bottom line is that his name was Asa, and he sought out the doctors, not God. So anyway, Refuah and Shabbos are both good things. There's a problem with making flights. Now, I'm not talking about doing malacha and Shabbos and malacha, the rest of malacha and rabbani. What I'm talking about, you should be aware, probably most of you are, that let's say you have a mild headache on Shabbos. So you're not supposed to take medicine. If you're the Ramban in the Sefer Torah Sa'adam, which is the Sefer Nochas Sabemus, but it's like you're, I noticed this in Englewood, and I think it's not the only place, where the cemetery is right next to the hospital. So if one of them can't help you, the other can help you. Or as apparently, as before my time in the morgue, Morgan Stendor, apparently, the stop line people would answer the payphone when it rang was, hello, this is the morgue, you kill and we chill. So basically, if the hospital kills them, you like that, don't you? So the hospital kills them, and if the hospital kills them, the cemetery can take care of them. So the Ramban's, and by the way, the Torah modeled this part of Yoredeya. It's the last part of Yoredeya on it, and that's why the Shulchan Aruch calls it. The Torah modeled the last part of Yoredeya on the Ramban's Torah 7. Follows that. So it begins with Hilchos Refuah. It's the first siman. I think it's Sin Lamed Hey. And then it goes on to Dinim of Goseis, and etc. And then Hilchos Kriya, and Hilchos Aninus, Hilchos Avelus. That's it. If Refuah doesn't work, then you go to the Avelus. That's exactly what it is. You like that, huh?
It's so morbid. It's so morbid.
That's life. Life is morbid.
Half of the
they're only
right next
it's pretty funny, isn't it?
It's much more efficient that way.
The truth is, I don't know why. I know why. The place that you more much more commonly, you don't see it. If you won't see it here, I believe with Jewish cemeteries.
It's not like a Christian.
No, I don't think so. Jewish cemeteries you tend to be these large cemeteries that I know of. But there are a lot, historically speaking, you'll see, in Bergen County, you'll see many of these. In smaller towns, where is the cemetery? Next to the church. Right, because I don't want to say cradle to grave, but the point is, burial is a religious ceremony. So it makes perfect sense that they're next to one another. But I find that every time I drive by what hospital, you're driving north, there's no one I go there, and it's like, hospital? Cemetery. They can't help you? They can't help you. All right. So bottom line is that the Ramban lays out the rules of, he collects a lot of different Gemaras about when the force with on Shabbos, what situations. The bottom line is that when a person has a Mechush Fa'alma, there is a Xeris Refuah on certain things. You're not allowed to take medicine. And even that's not just ingested medicine, there's certain things that you can't do. But once your illness is such that you're no fel the Mishkar, meaning you can't function fully anymore, you have to lie down, so then already Xeris Refuah doesn't apply, but you're not allowed yet to do Malachos Ayide Yisrael. Your Lacha might be mutter at that point, and then there might be a third stage of Sakanas Eder, and the final stage is Sakanas Nefashos, where everything goes. So if you have a Mechosh Ba'alma, you're not allowed to engage in Refuah. You know, why? It was Xerin Yisrael Shchikas Samaman, and they were afraid that you would grind up the spices to make the medicine. There is, I don't think it's a Chayim Na'eh, maybe it is. It might be a Das Yachud, the face of his man, as totally worth it, because we don't make our medicines that way. I don't think that's the accepted shita. I think we assume that Gzeira is a full of life, although I think when you go ask a shayla to your rav, you will find that we bend over backwards to classify something as though for the Mishkan so as to permit, you know, medicines. I certainly think that when you ask, I'm taking antibiotics, can I continue to take them Shabbos? The answer is yes. We don't even think about that one. But there are other circumstances where we might say that if it impedes a person's functioning enough, even if they're not mamishko from Mishka, then the Xeris of is applied. You can't do Malacha Ayde Israel, even the Rabbana, but the Xeris of to take a pill of ibuprofen for the cabinet, it would be with the
Boaz. Are we saying that, like, for the King Andy Rose,
no, I think the reason for the most part doesn't apply anymore. Yeah, correct, it doesn't, but it's like most Zeros. That Afal Kishab Balatalo, Bala Zero, because Davashim Vinyan, Sarah Vinyan Afal Akhariah. Now, I think that's pretty clear. That it's only because when Ephraim was insisting upon about Pasalot Akistan, which I think is not correct, that it's a fixed category, Zerim the Rabbanan, very often we usually assume. That's the default position, unless we know otherwise. However, how will we know? Ashkenazim don't do this, but Ashkenazim do it. Ashkenazim bans on Simchas Torah, and sometimes otherwise on Shabbos. But it's also.
We also do, but no good.
Is that because you're a halachist, or you have no neshama?
I'm a
halachist.
Thank you. Also because they drink while
doing it. That's a totally different issue. Look, there's no technical issue in the drinking. That's the problem. The drinking is much worse than the dancing, but halachically speaking, on the most technical level, is exerim ein misafkim, ein mitafkim, ein miraktim. There's no exerim and ein chosim. I'm fully in sympathy with you. And look, I have the soul of a litvak. I have a soul, but it's the soul of a litvak. So I'm not that into dancing and simple.
It's not all of them. It's just like a few here and there, but sometimes it's like a rabbi.
A rabbi who dances? Yes.
Right.
So honestly, the truth is, in our shul, they're very careful about the liquor. People do not, our hashkama minyan is as such. That we dochen at Musaf at Hashem. Most shuls dochen at honest, the Syrians, you dochen on a regular Yom Tov twice, right? Shachos and Musaf? Right. Okay. But Ashkenazim will dochen once. So regular Yom Tov will be dochen and Musaf, but on Shachos, but on Simchat Torah, many kilos dochen Shachos because they're afraid the Kohanim will be drunk on Musaf. Yes.
That would just like a
Tenth. No, that's why.
Oh.
They duchen in Shachris because they're assuming the Kohanim are not drinking before them. But they go, they daven Shachris, they get their aliyah, and then they go drink. So that's why they move from Simchas Torah, the duchening for Shachris, yeah? That's exactly why. So I'm in the shul where people generally do not drink very much on Simchas Torah. And therefore I'm not used to seeing, and I daven Hashkama where literally nobody's drinking. Our kapos consist of, each hakafah is one song. We walk around. I don't think that probably qualifies really as dancing. It probably is not even usher and exera dancing. So, but it makes Lithuanian souls like me happy. Some people who don't even have Lithuanian souls, they're probably really unhappy even with that. But yeah, Shimi, you can say something. All right. So,
what was the cloud that you were saying about
the rule, general rule in halacha, is afal pisha batla tam lo batla exera. That even if you have an issur ravana where the reason would seemingly no longer apply. Nonetheless, the Xera still applies because Davar Shebe Minyan, Sarach Binyan Achela Tira. That when the Davar Shebe Minyan, which means, we usually say it means the Sanhedrin, was Gozer, although we treat pretty much the entire Gemara as a Davar Shebe Minyan, even if there was no formal Sanhedrin, but Chatima Hashas, obviously. It's Bavel, and it's in the 6th century or something like that. So on two counts, there's no Sicha, there's no Sanhedrin, there's no Sanhedrin anywhere at that point. But Davar Shebe Minyan, Sarach Minyan Acher Behatira. So Svardim do to a lesser extent. You just give an example. I'll just tell you briefly. I don't want to go into this now. It's a separate year. The general rule is not a rule. The only time usually we say Batlatam Batlagzera is when the minhag of the community already is not to observe it. So then we rationalize if I say the Balei Tosfos. I always point out the Balei Tosfos didn't wake up one dreary green morning in Provence or northern France and say, you know, it's really dull out. Let's liven this up. Let's dance today. No. It means the Kehillah was doing it already for generations. And the Balei HaTosfot came along and said, it must be Mutter because we're Kehillah Kedosha. By the way, the Gemara also knew people would do it, but the Gemara says there in Beitza, Mutar Sheir Shogim Mayim Ezidim. But Tosis begins, it says, V'anan. V'anan, meaning us, we. He doesn't spell Kehillah Kedosha Ashkenaz. We're not doing something. So how is it mutter? So Tosis says, because we're not Bekim and Tikkun Klishir. And you know how I know it's post facto, because they didn't say it's mutter to play the guitar when you're doing it. Why not? The reason for not playing a guitar and the reason for not dancing is the same reason, Shema Yisaki and Klishir. So some Afronim will fetch, oh, but there's a difference between this era. No, the answer is, because they were dancing, but nobody had the gumption to pick up a musical instrument. Hence, the Balei HaTosfos say, we're not Bekim and Tikkun Klishir, that's why it's mutter. So the Balei HaTosfos do this in a lot of places. They are consistent defenders of the Minhag. The reason why Sfarim do it less is because the Rambam and the Gaonim, the Rambam's attitude was, Minhag be damned. This is what it says in the Gemara. This is what the Gaonim said. I know there are a couple of voices, the Shiri and the Shira. And who cares what Klal Yisrael is doing, at least in the Mishneh Torah. In the Tshuvot, it's a little bit more, you know, moderate. But as you go on, the influence of the Balei HaTosfos on Rambam, on Rashba, etc., starts to play a role in Minhag becomes another text. So just like you have to be miyashev to sugyot, you have to be miyashev a text, a sugya and Minhag Yisrael. That's, you don't have to like that. I know the pure. What? That's what we call Minhag Okev Halacha. And that's what the Gemara says. Doesn't talk about this case, but it is. It's not anything. Poskim, again, it's a much old. Poskim do not always. Not always defend the practice. That's a question of under what circumstances they do, what circumstances they don't. But I think when they look at a practice that's been around a long time, which is hard to understand, but it's being done by very firm Jews, and it doesn't appear, I would say, it doesn't appear to be pretzels gather, and it doesn't appear, today we would say, it doesn't appear to be ideological. They're much more inclined to be melamed zchut al haminhag. You saw the Aruch HaShulchan, just did it. And that was what he said. He didn't really like it even there. That he thought was a bridge too far to cross. But the, you know, people have observed, there was a defunct modern Orthodox organization, whose name I shall not mention, and it's defunct now, with, we might say, left-leanings, who in their manifesto, one of the things they said is that they need, one of the projects they wanted to undertake was the translation of the Aruch HaShulchan, because that was the key to modern Orthodox Judaism. I agree with 100%. If all modern Orthodox Jews followed everything that was written in the Aruch HaShulchan, we would be a godly, from wonderful, perfect community. They thought the Aruch HaShulchan, he's the Mekel, Mr. Burr is the Machmir. The Aruch HaShulchan is just a defender of communal practice. That's the nature. Mishnah Berurah is, historically speaking, even though it became very popular, is an outlier. The methodology of the Mishnah Berurah is not the classic methodology of posting. It happens to be in Yoridea, for example, in Hilchot Haruvot and Basar B'Chalav, the Ramah is much more machmir than the Mechaber, but it's not because of attention towards Chumrah, it's because he's codifying the Minhag. Right? One step further, I know this is not in our sugya, but you should be aware of this. The Darkei Moshe, the Ramah, in his introduction to the Darkei Moshe, if he has a Hakdama to the Shulchan Aruch. So the Ramah says that when he was a young Rav in Krakow, he wanted to paskin, I'll call Beis Yosef style, and if you use that term. Beis Yosef gives much greater weight to the early Rishonim. You know his rule. Rambam Rifrash, take two of the three. He gives much greater weight to the early Rishonim and much less to these later Rishonim. But the Rambam wanted to do that, and his colleagues hit him over the head and said, we don't do things that way. We hold Hilchas HaKevasrayim. So it's all, and what you have in Ashkenaz is you have these halachas farim being written, and then you get Hagos being written on them, and Hagos being like us. That's a style of doing. But it's the last stage, which often codifies all the chumras that the Jewish, you know, housewives had taken as practices, and that becomes codified in the Ramah. But in your idea, the Derech Klal, I think there are exceptions, but the Mechaber is usually, I'd say he's usually on average more a Mekel than the Ramah, number one. But number two, usually the Mechaber's din, Chumrah or Lakula, is closer to what you call Dina de Gemara than the Ramah. So the Ramah will defend the Ramah in your day and feel like he's Machmir right and left, which is true most in Uchas Pasa Bechol and Tarubas. But sometimes the Ramah has crazy Kulas because that was the Minhag. Right, so either one, that is the difference, you know, at least historically speaking, between Pesach of Sarad and Pesach of Ashkenaz. Again, that is theoretical, you know, that's typological, it's not always true. not always true. My favorite example here is with Ashkenazi. I get the little joy. There's a machlokas Rishon, a big machlokas Chachmei Sfarad and Chachmei Ashkenaz, whether or not Avelus Yom Rishon, if you bury the mace the day the mace dies, whether that Avelus is Daraisa or not. So the Gaonim and the Rambam, I think also Chachmei Sfarad hold Avelus Yom Rishon is Daraisa, and the Chachmei Balei Tosfos hold all Avelus is the Rabbanan. What's an Afkamina? An Afkamina is if you bury a mace dies and is buried on the last day of Yom Tov and Chutz Laaretz, Yom Tov Sheni. Since Yom Tov Sheni is only Aseh D'Rabbanan, and Avelut, if it's an Aseh D'Oraita, so the Aseh of Avelut is Dochet. Burying we do, whether we do it Aydei Yisrael, that's a separate thing. The Chacham is suspended. There's no Yom Tov at Meis. But what about Nihuga Avelut? If you hold that Avelut Yom Rishon is D'Oraita, then it's Nohe. So the Mechaber, at some point near the end of Hilchas Avelos, talks about this at one point. And at some point later, he's talking about. So they already had the machlokas, if I'm not mistaken, the Mechaber about is Hareh Shurishon Daraisana. And the Mechaber says that it would make sense that we should observe Avelos that day, but it's not the Minhag, even when he dies the last day of Yom Tov. And the Ramah just comes in and says, because Avelos Yom Rishon is the Ravana. And I don't know, I may be reading too much there, but I feel like it's the Ramah is saying, yes, ha! Because I'm able to Rishon is Rabbanan, because Klal Yisrael Paskin that way. That I don't know if that's what the Rabbah, if there's a little edge on that, but the Minhag is is a much more powerful force in Pesach in Ashkenaz up until point. The Mishnah Berurah represents a divergence from that, you know, that tendency, as does the Chazon Ish. But historically speaking, it wasn't that way. Okay. Sorry, I know you probably appreciated the tangent. It is, by the way, it is a tragedy that in our system of learning Gemara and Yeshivas, you don't get any of this backdrop. People, I haven't read with you. People don't read Hakdamos, right? There's a lot. Most of you are educated and sophisticated enough to appreciate some of the backdrop of what's going on, and you should appreciate it. Okay, so coming back to Shasisa. So bottom line is, you can't Zeres or Four applies on Shabbos, but we only the Maisa, it only applies. If you have a mild headache, so then you don't take your ibuprofen. Right? Once it's disabling, even a little bit, we'll tell you you're called for the mishkav, and you can't do isum drabanon, but just if there's a four, taking a medicine would be okay. All right. So now, Rav Yosef objects, and he says, right, that you're allowed to make the shittos on Shabbos, and you can drink zeisav amish. And why would you be making shasisa on Shabbos? And what kind of shasisa is this? Ava or raka? Raka, because it's bo hashem. So you're allowed to do it. Okay. So the isal gadaitach.
Isal gadaitach l'refuah.
Okay. Now, from the perspective of the path of the sugya, the mahalach of the sugya. So what is Rabbi Yosef assuming in his question? You already know something the Gemara doesn't raise here, that we show and point out the Gemara doesn't ask, that a Negron is mutter on Shabbos, right? And why, even if you put in a lot of Shemen, right? The Gemara says that l'ya'arenu Shemen v'kfila, but he can do it on the Negron. So why are you drinking the Negron?
You're really being
aggressive
for
drinking. You're drinking for the four purposes.
Yes, but under the guise of silver.
So one thing you should say immediately, what you know about a Negro is that it is a food, but sometimes people use that food the refor. It might be, if you accept the Ra'ar Shuka, that they alter the ingredients slightly. I think that's important. I meant proportions. It's the same ingredients. And I want to say it that way, but the way you said it. It's same ingredients, but you change the proportion slightly. You know, according to the Raya, you put in more shem. So the Gemara doesn't raise that issue, that comparison at all. What does the Gemara, what does Rav Yosef think shasisa is by its nature? I don't mean the physical ingredient, but what is the nature of consuming loose shasisa?
Is it something that has to be a
healer
or wouldn't be allowed on Shabbos?
Well, no. Maybe. The question comes from something, the way it's being used, should fall under the Xeris before. But what must Rav Yosef be assuming?
That
I just say you never use it for Afila purposes. You never use it for Afila purposes. A Negro, and that's why the Gemara is not, that's why he doesn't ask for a Negro. Because a Negro is used for Afila. A Negro is used for Afila, and maybe without even altering the proportions. Sometimes you drink it for Afila because you just want to drink on a Negro. Imagine that's what you need, guys need to do for Purim. The sheer Purim publication, a Negro, a Coke commercial with a Negro. Okay, you get that polar bear, you know the polar bear that drinks the Coke? So you got to take the can and put a Negro on it. All right. You have one polar bear with a sore throat, and one polar bear who's just, relaxing and drinking his Negro. So a Negro can be drank lachila, means shtia, but it's whatever, I don't know what you call it, we're not sure about that. And it can be used for four purposes. So Yosef is asking a question here. It sounds like, and if you take Rav Chisda's statement or the Gemara's explanation of Chisda's statement, lachila versus lefuah, it seems to be straightforward. Right? One is lachila, one is lefuah. So Rav Yosef asks a question. Okay, so he says it can't be lefuah because otherwise why would it be mutar and Shabbos? Now note, by the way, that the Shavin, Shabochus, and Hashtus itself, if it were alone, it wouldn't tell you anything. It wouldn't be that refuah, but obviously if you're doing it on Shabbos, it's because you can consume it. This drinking of Zeis Olam Mitzri, I assume, has to be then refuah. There's no Isser Malacha associated with drinking Zeis Olam Mitzri, right? It's the Shabbos Shabbos and make the Shikos, but obviously you can only make it if you're going to consume it on Shabbos, whereas Shosin Zeis Olam Mitzri is straight Zeis refuah issue. But obviously, if you're allowed to be Vokesh the Shikos, you're obviously allowed to drink it, because if you can't use it on Shabbos, then you can't prepare it, because it's hachara at the very least. Okay, so Abaye responds, says, Amar le Abaye.
Amar le Abaye is a atul lo tisbara.
Who's he talking to? You know, so if he's saying, one second, what you're saying makes no sense. The Hatanan.
The Hatanan kol ha'ofen ochel adam l'refuah b'shabbos l'kol ha'mash in shoten.
So one second. So Abaye asked a question to him, Vatanan, Kol ha'ochlen ochel adam l'refuah, and kol ha'mashkim shosa. What does that mean?
If it's normal, that's food.
So you're making a supposition there. I'll allow you to have that, but I'm not sure that's true. You're saying if it's normally eaten as food, kol ha'ochlen, something that is normally eaten as food, you can eat l'refuah on Shabbos. Remember, even though you're not eating for food purposes, you're eating it for purposes. You're allowed to because it is, you said, normally useful for purposes. We might have to modify that. Yechol ha-mashkim, things that people, I'll use, normally drink as a drink. So you're allowed to be shosen for purposes. So Abaye says, go ahead. Skip this one. So guys, just know that the first lashon in the Gemara is not there. It's only there in the two printed editions. You should have realized that. Jacob, you prepared the whole, you prepared this Gemara, right?
What?
You prepared it just far, right?
I read it, yeah.
That's fine. What was the difference between two lashonos?
Yeah, I was confused.
The answer is there is none. I was confused too. And somehow, I don't know why, I suspected there was something, and I looked in the critical edition, which I still owe for next semester now, for your table. I looked in and I saw that only the two printed editions had the double thing. The rest of the manuscripts have just the second lashon. So they would have Ella, Gabra, where's the Mishnah? I can't find this one second. Here it is. Ella, Ma'is l'chal ha'meimar, Gabra l'achil l'kamachave, u'refu m'mei l'kahave, ha'charami l'achil l'kamachave, u'refu m'mei l'kahave. So now the question is, Ronnie, do you want to modify? I don't know if you have to modify, but I'm going to ask, what was Rav Yosef's question? Did Rav Yosef think that this was some... I presume the Amoraim all know what the Metzias is. In other words, there are three possibilities with Shasisa. It's primary Achila. It is primarily Refuah, but sometimes Lachila. It's always La Refuah. Those are, I think, three ways you could break things down. When Rav Yosef challenged Rav Chisda, when Rav Chisda said, Ha Lachila, Ha La Refuah, what did he mean by Ha La Refuah? Ha Lachila means, I would argue, means it's used exclusively for Achila. That's probably a reasonable reading. what does Hagam Rafua mean? So you have to decide what Hagam Rafua, what he meant. I'm going to leave you guys to figure this out for tomorrow. We'll start with this. And you should take a look at the Tosafos in here and look at the Rashba as well. I'll try to send you the Rashba. But when what was Rav Chiska, what did Rav Chiska mean when he said L'Rafua? How did Rabbi Yosef understand that, and what was he responding to? What was he asking from the Mishnah and Shabbos? And what was Abayi pointing out to him? Right, so you have to decide. There are four possibilities. Something is only L'Achila, primarily L'Achila, primarily L'Rafua, only L'Rafua. So obviously not talking about the first category here when you're talking about Shasisa, which is Raka. But which of those three categories? Is it primarily L'Achila but also used L'Rafua? Primarily L'Rafua, even though sometimes people eat it? Or only L'Rafua? Now, obviously, which category would not make sense to be discussing?
The last one.
Because
then it shouldn't be done on Shabbos.
Correct. That's something that is truly exclusive to L'Rafua. And nobody's going to say that especially if you get the generic brand, at least the Advil is the brand name Advil, Advil as it's called, the brand name Advil. we call ibuprofen. So Advil, Advil is the brand name. So it's usually coated with like a tiny bit of sweet something. It's much easier to go down. If you go to get the Kirkland Signature brand, you know, Costco, so there's no code, no sugar coating there. They're just all business. All business and money. It costs a fraction of the Advil. It has the same ingredients, but it doesn't have any sugar coating on the outside. Something sweet coated. So I'm going to, now, but I would say even the Advil. Nobody eats that. Sometimes L'Achila, but mostly the Rafua. It's a very bad habit to be in. So the question is, what? Tums are heavily sweetened, number one. And number two, Tums don't have much of a side effect. It's just calcium. Maybe. Okay, I don't know. I only use it to protect if I eat late Friday night. That's the only time I typically use it. But yes, at best, that's Ikaro L'Rafua. I don't know. It might be cool L'Rafua, but you're finding some people just like to run it. Okay. All right, so you want to figure out in those two categories, what is the Shachar and Tanya? The Gemara, when you finish that, go on to do the Hamotzi, and I don't know if we're going to be able to start Shlachos or not. I hope we'll start Shlachos, but we're not going to finish it this month.